19th in our series of studies in soteriology, what the Bible teaches about salvation, and the third on the topic of reprobation. And we're going to indulge in an allegory this morning to help us to understand reprobation better. In fact, I call it, if you have your notes, bottom of page 9, a tomato allegory, tomato gardening, helping us to understand various views on reprobation. Let's remind ourselves what an allegory is. Here are some descriptive words from the internet. As a literary device, an allegory is a narrative in which a character, place, or event is used to deliver a broader message about real-world issues and occurrences. At the heart of an allegory, by the way, is a symbolism where one thing stands for another. The person, things, events in the allegory, which is a kind of story, stand for things in the real world. These orange-red things on the table stand for something in the real world. Authors have used allegory throughout history in all forms of art, say, right, literature also, to illustrate or convey complex ideas and concepts in ways that are comprehensible or striking to viewers, readers, or listeners. Writers and speakers typically use allegories to convey hidden or semi-hidden or complex meanings, and in our case, there's nothing we want to hide. It's a complexity of the biblical teaching on reprobation. So allegories are used to convey complex meanings, in our case, through symbolic figures, actions, imagery, or events, which together create the moral, spiritual, or political meaning the author wishes to convey. Many allegories use personification of abstract concepts, and we'll see personification today. Lots of allegory in the Bible. When the Bible talks about a vine, John 15, I'm the vine, you are the branches, that's an allegory, right? Old Testament and New Testament talk about Israel as a vineyard, God's vineyard. That's an allegory. And as we were saying this morning, the figure of the sheep, the elect being the sheep, that's an allegory that Jesus uses to describe the elect, describe believers. Well, again, if you're in your notes at the bottom of page 9, here we go with a tomato allegory. So we'll turn again to, we've already mentioned tomatoes a little bit to help us to understand, but now a lengthy, in essence, comparison between the life of some tomatoes and the life and future, good and bad, of tomatoes and the biblical doctrine of reprobation. And particularly, this allegory will help us to see differences among six different views, and we'll go through each one carefully, six different views on reprobation. So assume we have six gardeners, each with a garden and plants. He may have other things in his garden. We're only concentrating. I have peppers. These tomatoes on the table had peppers growing next to them, but we'll ignore the peppers. Each of the gardeners has a gardening manual. That will turn out to be important. A gardening manual that he follows. But the manuals are different from each other. Ultimately, we need to discover which manual corresponds to reality, that is, biblical reality, concerning valid gardening processes and practices, the nature of the plants, and the goals of the gardener. Which of the six schools of thinking about reprobation correspond to valid biblical gardening practices, the nature of the plants and the goals of the gardener? And you should be thinking, what's the gardener? What are the tomatoes? What happens in the garden? What's involved in the life of the tomato? Well, first of all, the universalist gardener. Of course, the universalist says, in terms of tomatoes, all the tomatoes are going to get a wonderful future. Universalist theologian then says everyone gets to be with God. So the universalist gardener plants several plants. As they grow, the vines intertwine. So the tomatoes are mixed together. They are in my garden. These tomatoes were, some of them right next to each other, but they look quite different. They're different varieties, right? Intertwined. Can't tell what plant they're on. The gardener just waits for all the tomatoes to show him that they want to be near him. When they do so, he gathers them all in his basket, which is large enough to hold all of them, and welcomes him into the house. Maybe he puts them in salad or soup, makes tomato soup, taco sauce, does something useful with those tomatoes. But in effect, there's no selection at all by the gardener, because all the tomatoes get to go in the gardener's house, and he enjoys them. And he does this because that's what his manual tells him to do. What's the manual? Think. Secondly, the Pelagian gardener, following Pelagius. The Pelagian gardener plants several plants. As they grow, the vines intertwine. You know how it goes. As the growing season comes to an end, any tomatoes that don't get taken into the house will rot. The gardener has a very high opinion of the tomatoes. He goes out to his garden with a big basket, a basket large enough for all the tomatoes, and announces to the tomatoes that it's harvest time. Some of the tomatoes from each plant decide on their own whether or not they want to go into the house. See, they're all intertwined. But this one here, and that one here, and that one there, and that one there, they decide, I want to go in the house, Mr. Gardener. He puts the interested tomatoes in his basket, and he takes them inside. The others simply decide not to go, and they end up just rotting away. The gardener hasn't made any selecting. And this is all according to his manual. The third kind of gardener is the Arminian gardener, very similar to the Pelagian gardener, a little different. The Arminian gardener plants several plants. As they grow, the vines intertwine. As the growing season comes to an end, any tomatoes that don't get taken in the house will rot. You know that all by now. When the gardener goes out to his garden with a basket big enough for all the tomatoes in the garden and announces that it's harvest time, some tomatoes from each plant individually decide whether or not they will be selected by the gardener. Their decision is aided by a little pep talk, which in the manual, the Arminian gardener's manual, is called Prevenient Grace. And the gardener gives him a little pep talk. Only some of them, right? Only for some of them. The rest never get to hear that pep talk. The tomatoes that want to get selected apparently plump themselves up a little bit, so when the gardener comes, they'll look attractive. See, the gardener's helping some along, and they get the message, and they, hey, pick me. The gardener has decided ahead of time that he'll select any tomatoes that plump up. Appealing tomatoes. In fact, he knew which ones would want to be selected and decided to label them as good for picking on the basis of what he knew they would do. The others decide, and this is for some reason that nobody knows, who would want to not to go into the house and be enjoyed by the gardener. But the others decide not to look good to the gardener, and they end up just rotting away. It's not the gardener's fault that some tomatoes don't want to come, stay where they are. He may even feel sad, but after all, he tried to get them to come in. Gave him a pep talk. He does all he can. Who's the gardener? You should know by now. He does all that he can. He's tried. But ultimately, the choice is up to the tomatoes. And this is all written down in the Arminian gardening manual. Well, the fourth kind of gardener and garden. This is the Emeraldian or the four-point Calvinist gardener. That's what it says on the manual. It says Emeraldian gardening, the other one. First it says Universalism gardener. Second one was Pelagian gardener. You can pick these up in the garden store. No. They're all on the rack. Careful which one you get. Arminian gardener. All you need to know about Arminian gardening. The Emeraldian gardening, parentheses, four-point Calvinist gardening. Now remember that I have said in the past that there is no such thing as four-point Calvinism gardening, right? It can't work. The system, the gardening system, falls apart, right? But we'll come back to that later. For the Emeraldian or four-point Calvinist gardener, the picture is much more complicated. Now, this is what the manual tells him to do. The gardener plants several plants as they grow. The vines intertwine. Okay, you know that. As the growing season comes to an end, any tomatoes that don't get taken in the house will rot. At harvest time, the gardener puts out a really big basket, announces that the time has come, and hopes deep in his heart that all of the tomatoes will ask to be picked. That sounds like the Pelagian gardener. You know? No matter how many tomatoes may show that they want to be put in a basket, the gardener will have room for them in the big basket and in the kitchen. He's provided for all the tomatoes that want to come to be enjoyed in the kitchen. He's provided. He's got space for them. But he also knew before he went out to harvest the tomatoes that none of the tomatoes would want to be picked. So he decided as a second plan that he will choose certain tomatoes for picking. He'd really like to have all of them come into the house. He's big on eating tomatoes. But he also knows that tomatoes are not going to cooperate with that, and that none of them would want to be picked. So he decided as a second plan. So that's chapter 2 in the manual, Emeraldian manual. It's called, the first chapter won't work, so this is what we're going to do. So he has a second plan, it's in chapter 2, that he'll choose certain tomatoes for picking. You got to get some tomatoes in the house somehow. None of them really want to come, which he had hoped that they would. But the manual says, no, you got to do something else to get them in. So notice that the gardener makes plans for all the tomatoes to come, but also for some of the tomatoes to come. He'd like chapter one to work, but it doesn't. This gardener and his manual seems to be going in two different directions. The gardener shudders at the thought that he might be regarded as too harsh and just ignores the rest of the tomatoes, trying not to imagine their future and shutting them out of his mind. So he has made plans then for some of the tomatoes to come as a fallback. Second chapter attempt. But the other ones he just keeps out of his mind. Although originally he really wanted all of them there, but some he can't. He just, I'm really sorry, I feel bad, and I'm not even going to think about the other ones. After all, he did make plenty of room for all of them in the house, and he had a really big basket. But anyway, some of them don't try to get picked and end up just rotting away. Now, the official Amaraldian four-point Calvinist, I should have brought the manuals for you to look at, and I forgot this morning, but the official Amaraldian four-point Calvinist gardening manual says that the gardener is supposed to do the selecting of tomatoes because they won't choose on their own. But in actual gardening practice, it's the tomatoes that do the choosing. How strange. It sounds like, you know, the Armenian tomatoes plumping up, doesn't it? Take me! Well, in actuality, that's what's happening. Now, the tomatoes are saying, take me. You know, I choose to go in the house. So the gardener's supposed to do the selecting of tomatoes because they won't choose on their own. But in actual practice, gardening practice, it's tomatoes that do the choosing. Most of the Amaraldian gardeners know how well the tomatoes can actually make choices on their own. Okay. In fact, these gardeners have developed sophisticated ways of giving the tomatoes pep talks in order to coax the interested ones into plumping up. And so the manual says you can go out and you can sing to the tomatoes. And you can say, please come in. Please come in. Please choose yourself. Please choose yourself. And there's songs that they're written in there. It's amazing in these manuals. They got music. It's like a hymnal, you know. Got the hymns for calling the tomatoes, please come in. And it's very much like what the Armenian gardener does, because he's appealing, both of them are appealing to the tomatoes to come. Don't you want to go in the house? That's hymn number three. Don't you want to go in? It's a very famous Amaraldian gardening hymn. Well, now, the fifth type of gardener. This is the moderate Calvinist gardener. Okay. Moderate Calvinist. This is even more complex. The moderate Calvinist gardener, according to his manual, plants several tomato plants. As they grow, the vines intertwine. The gardener knows all about each of the tomatoes in his garden, and he's chosen the ones he wants and the ones he doesn't want before he goes out to harvest them. He also knows that all the tomatoes, when left to their own devices, would, for some strange reason, always prefer to stay outside and rot, even though it's clear that they will perish out there. Because of their nature, the tomatoes in his garden don't want to plump themselves up to catch his attention. Say, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go in. Isn't that different from the other ones? Where the tomatoes say, take me. Here the tomatoes are, I don't want anything to do with you, Mr. Gardener. So they don't want to plump themselves up. They don't want to catch his attention. They'd rather die out there. Very strange. The gardener simply didn't plant the kind of tomato that would make a choice to go inside. If any tomatoes are to be selected, it will be up to the gardener. As the growing season comes to an end, any tomatoes that don't get picked will simply rot. At harvest time, he goes out and selects some tomatoes from all of the intertwined plants, knowingly not selecting the others, deselecting the others. He knows exactly what tomatoes are on each plant and has decided each ahead of time which ones he wants and which ones he doesn't want. Clearly, the gardener does the selecting and the deselecting. Both acts are the selecting act and the deselecting are unconditional. That is, it doesn't matter what the tomatoes do or what they look like. Now, we'll see that there's something conditional to this later on, but at this point, the actual selecting is unconditional. Because remember, all the tomatoes would rather rot. Should be clear by now that when any of our gardeners so far selects one or more tomatoes, he automatically excludes the others. That's what I did with these, of course, these four samples. I picked this, 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 and this. And there's still some out there. I saw them. They looked just like these. I saw the tomatoes. But I decided to take these. So the moderate Calvinist gardener pays as much, he automatically excludes others. Some moderate Calvinist gardening manuals describe it as a passing over, or better, a passing over with regard to the blessings that will come to the favored tomatoes. In other words, they just won't get what the other tomatoes will get. So whichever term is used, a passing over, or deselecting, excluding, non-choosing, whichever term is used, we need to make sure that we do not see the deselection as a passive act on the part of this gardener. Remember the Amaraldian and the Arminian, they feel so bad for the other tomatoes. They don't even, the ones they don't take in the house, they feel so bad, they just look the other way, and they try not to think about them. So this is not really a passing over. For the modern Calvinist, the gardener knows about those other tomatoes. Okay. Whether he feels bad or not is a different question. Certainly, the moderate Calvinist gardener pays as much attention to the deselected tomatoes as he does to the selected ones when he does his choosing, as I did when I picked these this morning. This equality is called in the gardening manuals double predestination. This tomato had the destiny of coming here this morning. So did the other three. The other ones were deselected, and this is called double predestination. The moderate Calvinist gardener determines the choice of both kinds of tomatoes equally. Now, after the moderate Calvinist gardener selects some tomatoes for his enjoyment, he mentally tags them with a future and all the things necessary to move them toward that future. He decides that he will carefully carry them into the house and preserve them until he can enjoy them. That plan is called predestination and includes the promise of enjoying the gardener. The steps for the remaining tomatoes are somewhat parallel to the gardener's work in selecting tomatoes for his enjoyment. They're deselected and associated with a plant, which the manual calls predestination. In the case of these deselected tomatoes, the plan can be described as a predestination that consists of condemnation. So some tomatoes are predestined to go into the house, have a wonderful time in there, being everything a tomato could ever be. Soup, salad, sauce. The other ones, predestination for condemnation. So there are thus two elements to what this gardener does with both sets of tomatoes. He selects and he attaches gain and blessing to the one set, and he selects and attaches condemnation to the other set. They die in the vine. In other words, selecting is done, as it always is in life, for some purpose. Selecting isn't an end for itself. So when I went to the garden this morning, I didn't say this, and this tomato, and walk away. I took them with me. I went out. I had a purpose for these, right? To bring them here for your enjoyment this morning, right? And the others, the purpose is to leave them. So let's review a little bit concerning what we've seen so far, the various gardeners, the five gardeners and the deselected tomatoes. The Arminian and Amaraldian four-point Calvinist gardening manuals say that their gardeners don't deselect anyone. Tomatoes do it on their own. So these gardeners ignore some tomatoes in the selection process and also ignore them with regard to their unhappy future. They've made their own choice. Pelagian, Arminian, Amaraldian. The tomatoes that rot in the garden, they've made their own choice. The gardener didn't even think about those. And he knows that if he starts thinking about them, he'd feel bad. But so he just ignores them. He's disciplined himself to ignore them. The moderate Calvinist choosing is indeed a deliberate act, and he knows clearly which tomatoes he will select and which he will deselect. He's active in selecting and active in deselecting. Again, when I went to the garden this morning, I picked this one, and I looked at some others. Oh, even in the middle of the process, I looked at some others and said, no, not that one. Yes, this one. No, not that one. Yes, that one. Okay. The moderate Calvinist is active and selective and active in deselecting. He has a plan for all the selected tomatoes and a plan for the deselected tomatoes. The plan for the selected tomatoes, of course, is usefulness to the gardener and bringing honor to him as a good gardener. I have not really said much about this, but the manuals all talk about the contests that gardeners can enter and the appreciation that the gardeners get for what they do with the tomatoes. So being a good gardener is and being successful in this whole thing is worthwhile because they get, well, praise, you call it praise. The plan, of course, for the deselected tomatoes is condemnation and death. But while this moderate Calvinist, while his plan for the selected tomatoes is active, his plan for the deselected tomatoes is passive. He knows which ones they are, and he deselects because he selects others, but then he doesn't do anything. From then on, he doesn't do anything. He passively allows the ones he's chosen not to go into the house to stay on the vine and rot. He takes their outcome fully into account, but he just lets them go and head toward rotting on the vine. In a sense, he confirms them in their rotting and he condemns them for rotting. Condemns them for being tomatoes, because tomatoes won't live forever, right? This approach by the moderate Calvinist gardener is called judicial reprobation. Manuel actually says that. Tomatoes can get reprobated. Who knew? And he's decided ahead of time that for the tomatoes that he doesn't select, he will, as a judgment, confirm them in the direction that they are going and condemn them for that condition. That's funny. He condemns the tomatoes that are rotting for rotting. In practice, the gardener actually does his selecting of the rotting tomatoes for loss because they're already rotting. So the gardener says, you are deselected to rot because you're already rotting. Maybe you see a problem with that. The moderate Calvinist gardening manual also says that it would be good to say that the gardener does not cause the rotting in any way. He's not responsible for the rotting. And by the way, if you see something conditional here in this, the conditional condemnation for rotting, you're correct. There is a conditional element to this, but we'll talk about that more later. In other words, they are condemned for rotting, not just out of the blue, but they're condemned because they rot, and they will be lost because they rot. Well, wait a minute, the other ones were rotting too. So there seems to be a problem with that. We'll come back to that in future studies. Now, finally, the high Calvinist gardener. The high Calvinist gardener. And you should all the time be thinking, which of these gardening practices fits with reality? Okay. So this gardener does some things that are quite different from what the moderate Calvinist gardener does. In planting his garden, by the way, there are very few of these gardeners. Very few high Calvinist gardeners. You go to the rack in the garden store and pick up, you know, look at the six kinds of books on the rack, and there's a whole bunch of these on the rack, right? Because there are very few gardeners that grab that book and use it. In planting his garden, the high Calvinist gardener sets in the ground two tomato plants. Remember the other ones, it was several plants, they intertwined, da da da. This is, he sets in the garden two tomato plants. And the manual says, call these A, call one plant A and the other plant B. It's got pictures, graphics in it, okay, A and B. And they eventually intertwine like the other tomatoes, but there's only two plants and they're labeled. He determines that he'll select for his use the tomatoes from plant A and discard the tomatoes from plant B. So all the tomatoes on plant A go in the house eventually. All the tomatoes on plant B rot and die. This plan for deliberate discarding seems quite strange until we realize why plant a plant that you know is going to, every tomato on it is going to die, and well, you sure don't look as good as a gardener, do you? Seems strange until we realize that the gardener is simply following the manual for high Calvinist gardeners, which says that even when he does what the tomatoes from plant B, will ultimately bring him honor as a gardener. So this plant B, none of the tomatoes goes in the house, but he looks good and he wins a prize for that. Now, that's really strange. You know, you can go to the grain show in September, say, here's my tomatoes that I selected, here's the ones I didn't select, they all died, shriveled on the vine, everybody says, you win. Fantastic. That's weird, isn't it? One reason is that all the tomatoes from both plants would rot and die if he didn't select some to take inside. In fact, in planting his garden, he factors in the rotting of the tomatoes. So he factors in everything about plants A and B. He somehow plans for the rotting of all the tomatoes from the very beginning. And this is different, very different from the modern Calvinist manual. So selecting some tomatoes is a great rescue operation because he's very conscious that they'd all die. This is true for the modern Calvinist gardener also, but he doesn't determine until after he does his planting which tomatoes he'll select and deselect. The fact that the high Calvinist gardener decided to put plant B in the ground and have its tomatoes die and did this before he contemplated their deterioration through rotting is called, in the manual, sovereign condemnation. They're not condemned because they rot, but instead, they rot because they're first condemned. Whoa. Very different. On the other hand, the modern Calvinist gardener has tomatoes that are condemned because they rot. Remember, that's where condition comes in. They don't rot because they're condemned. So this last gardener is active in selecting and deselecting different tomatoes. The manual calls this double predestination gardening, the same as with the moderate Calvinist gardener, but he's also active in determining the future of the two types of tomatoes, where the moderate Calvinist gardener was passive toward the second type, condemning it for its rotting. In terms of the tomatoes, this activity toward both types of tomatoes by the high Calvinist gardener is called equal ultimacy gardening. From the very beginning, he set up his garden so there would be two tracks, planning that he would do two different things for the two sets of tomatoes, A and B. Now, we need to underscore that none of the gardeners can ever be accused of directly making a tomato rot. This is the fault of the tomatoes themselves. This is beyond the analogy. Where the rotting came from, that's another analogy, okay, another story, if you could stand it. All the tomatoes in our analogy have a disease that they themselves actually started. So even though the gardener puts the plants in the ground knowing that the tomatoes are destined for spoiling, he's not directly responsible for the spoiling itself. He leaves that to the tomatoes. And therefore, the death of the tomatoes, the dying of the tomatoes, after they rot, is not his fault either. Keep in mind, however, that the whole gardener belongs to the gardener. It wouldn't exist without him. We'll come back to this at the end of our treatment on reprobation. But back to our analogy. To summarize, then, for the two Calvinist gardeners, and the four-point Amaraldian Calvinist, I don't see him as a Calvinist gardener. There's only two Calvinists, real Calvinist gardeners. Okay, and one of them, I won't tell you now, but one of them is following the manual of life better. Okay, fits with reality. Okay, so for both of the last two types, however, selecting and deselecting takes place, and connected the tomatoes with their different futures takes place. And this is different from the previous four types of gardener. Tomato selection includes choosing from the whole crop and connecting those tomatoes with their great future, or deselecting from the whole crop and connecting those tomatoes with their sad future. But the two Calvinistic gardeners plant their crops differently from each other, and they differ in the degree of activity in the future with regard to the future that the tomatoes, the deselected tomatoes have. So here I've drawn a chart, and these are adapted from the two manuals, the Modern Calvinist Gardening Manual and the High Calvinist Gardening Manual. I simplified them for you a little bit, but notice the difference. For the moderate Calvinist gardener, he plans a garden. The High Calvinist gardener, he plans a garden also. The moderate Calvinist, then, the next step in his work with his garden is he plants two plants. And he gets a garden with intertwined plants. And yet the high Calvinist gardener, he determines two types of plants before he plants anything. A and B, the manual says call one A and call one B. And one's selected, one will be deselected. So from the very beginning, before he even plants them, he knows which ones are. He plans for the selecting and deselecting. And then the moderate Calvinist gardener, he plants the garden, they intertwine, and they all rot. They're all headed for rotting, and he goes out and he selects and deselects, right? And the moderate Calvinist gardener, if you continue down the left chart, he's got some tomatoes selected to take in the house, and then he's got some tomatoes selected to die. And he actively selects the ones that he takes into the house with the glorious future of being fulfilled as tomatoes in the house in some way. And the others are passively left to rot in the vine. They're judged. They're condemned for rotting anyway. But the high Calvinist gardener, after he plans for plants A and B, plant A he associates with a glorious future before he even plants. See how late in the planning he plants that? Then he plants plant A, and then after they grow, he picks them to go in the house. And the same with plant B. He associates the tomatoes with the condemnation. So all the selecting and deselecting is done for both very actively before they even go into the ground, and the plant B, tomatoes, all will face loss. Well, we certainly should not build our theology on the life of the tomato. But this allegory should help us to understand the key features of reprobation as understood by different schools of theology. Along the way, we've learned a lot about the different positions. This section of the study on reprobation is also designed to clarify the point that some kind of action follows selection and deselection. We've seen how this shows up or doesn't show up in the different manuals, and therefore theological positions. So I counsel you, however, please do not try to press every detail of the allegory. Tomatoes aren't people. Gardeners aren't God. Each of the gardeners in the allegory uses a different manual, and I've provided for you to look at on your own a summary of what is found in the manuals if you put them all together side by side. And so we need to ask which manual corresponds to what the Bible teaches us about spiritual reprobation. And then for next time, we'll begin to look at Scripture very carefully. Heavenly Father, thank you for your word and what it tells us about your electing and non-electing processes and your plan. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the wonder of election. We are saddened by reprobation. Cause us to see reprobation within the context of all that you are doing with human beings in space and time. We pray this in Jesus' name.